I want to record this group of poems together just because I like them. The first one's called Crazy, and crazy is also the first word of the poem. Crazy as the wind he was and wanted for himself, nothing but for her, the most glorious chrysanthemums, armloads of yellow held loose, huge blooms oozing, dollops of sunlight. Behind them, his smile, so wide, no one, not even her, could ever hope to resist. Then he'd run toward her through the tall grass, in slow-mo, maybe, his dozens of chrysanthemums bobbing every which way, crazy as the wind he was and wanted. Or so he told his florist in the morning, who recommended roses or a nosegay, anything but crazy, but chrysanthemums. But what he wanted was the wind. This is called Just Before the Rain. Three amber beacons meander around the night sky, announcing something, and I follow all the way across town until, out of nowhere, a life-size plywood arc, blue, bobbing on fake yellow waves, the heads of two giraffes poking up through the top and smiling like no animals are supposed to smile except maybe alone in the privacy of their own wilderness before they were ransacked and led up the plank to a small stall for a 40-day boat ride to nowhere. Too poor, they both knew, for a real cruise, so stuck together for this. In a deck below, the hippos, snouts opening and closing as if they can't stop laughing at the thought of adding ballast so the whole damn thing doesn't just topple over and sink. And for God's sake, of all things, two ostriches weaving back and forth on deck like drunks toward Noah at the wheel, looking a lot older and dumber than I ever would have guessed it would take to keep a boat like this afloat. His furrowed brow, throbbing out in neon, an ad for car stereos and sunroofs. I wait at the base of the stairs, figuring it's probably only a matter of time now before those three amber beacons beckon my roommate and we board. This is called Breaking the Ice. Last night's freezing rain slid like a tight glove precisely down to the finest detail over leaf and twig and bud, each one iridescent now in the bright March sun. I've been studying this scene for the last half hour or so, trying to find a way of saying how life is sometimes like that. You know, the ironic play of fire over ice, thin shimmering fingers burrowing into the firm sky against all odds, achieving something. Or the other way around, slivers of heat intruding into the good wood which shivers, gives way. I can't make either one work. In the ninth grade, I prayed day after day that she'd stop and talk to me on her way out of school. I'd stand by the door, hoping to catch her eye as she hurried by, or try to come up with a clever line to break the ice. I couldn't make either one work. So every afternoon at 3, for the last 30 years, in my mind's eye at least, she breezes right by without noticing I'm there. Hugs her smug boyfriend, climbs aboard the same clunky bus, and chugs away. I walk down to the bus stop to meet my son. By the time we get home, the ice is crashing down in big wet slabs all over the backyard. We sit on the back steps and laugh like crazy, amazed at all that dazzle and disarray. As his bus heads up the hill, I could swear I see her looking out the window at us, big eyes, like it just dawned on her that tomorrow, when she's heading home, I won't be there. This one's called For Daphne on the Mornings After. It's based on that Greek myth of a young girl who gets turned into a tree to avoid some terrible fate. She told me how in her day it happened matter-of-factly. Some girl on her way, say, to the well, stopped in her tracks, legs stiff as tree stumps, feet rooted to the ground, and from fingertips clutching upward into a cloudless blue sky, thousands of leaves puffed from their buds at once. The news spread fast, proud parents announcing it, a coming out of sorts. Brothers and sisters amazed at the luck of such a great story to tell to their friends at school. Her boyfriend, well, at a loss, a little miffed, missing her. Later, all the celebrating done, everyone else home and asleep, he'd hold her in his arms all night, promise never to marry. I couldn't have been more than 7 or 8 when I first heard you murmuring from the old elm I had to walk past on my way to the creek to play. For years, I steered clear, trying not to listen. Then, one morning, my mind too much abuzz with wonder to stay away, I clung to the trunk, hoping to seep like a dark stain into the clean wood beneath. That night, your words turned into flocks of birds, swarming wildly by moonlight across savannas of empty sky. Last week, on my way to work, the hollow of my head filling up, as usual, with a cloudless blue sky, two birds circling without a place to settle, my legs just suddenly stiffened. Tendrils descended from my feet, holding me hard, arms flung up to steady myself, locked, hands cupped open like empty nests. Clouds of doubts massed up, passing in fast forward, rationales I ransacked in my panic for an answer. The inevitable and graceless changes of age, the grappling fingers of someone else's past, death's staccato laughter. Then the birds settled, and I heard again your words. I notice it now, mostly mornings. A little stiffness in my hips, that ringing in my ears. All day the birds busy themselves with nesting. By night they settle down to rest. I hear only the ceaseless music of their voices, or mine, singing of loves lost and then recovered. Ever the same song, growing simpler and more clear, nearer to the light into which we are always rising up or settling, beyond which there is nothing more now either one of us needs to say.